Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, November 30th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a cloudy 51 degrees and overcast here, but warm in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Neuroscanning Memories, Brain Reconditioning, and Dr. Smartphone. And we're going to talk about Dr. Smartphone a little bit here today. We were discussing apps that now will be able to diagnose you. Future of medicine is in your smartphone, and we'll even go a step beyond that. Future of medicine is going to be in your smartphone, then in your wearable clothing and biosensors, and eventually in the little legions of nanobots in your blood and your gut. And that has been something that Kurzweil has outlined many times in the past and has shown how it will be wonderful for the 21st century to be able to cure what ails us. Oh, no. Hold on one second. I wanted to read this story, but Wall Street Journal said that I've already clicked the story up on my screen 5 times, and now I have to create an account and pay for it. Come on. Maybe if I go to a different browser. Are you kidding? All I want to do is read, like, the first few sentences of the story. Welcome to the 21st century. There will be no free content on the internet, including stories that don't tell you anything except that maybe your doctor might be on your smartphone. Oh, well. Tell you what, if I can't get to the story, we're going to skip you, Wall Street Journal. I will boycott you. I don't read them anyway. All right, let's try this one more time. I'm sure it'll probably still remember me. How ridiculous is that? Sign in, get an account, and pay us $1.99 a month to get your subscription to read more news that nobody believes. All right. We'll find out. We'll find out. Read the full story. Subscribe or sign in. I got to pay for it. Well, I guess we're not going to read the story. So, so much for the first story of the show. Oh, how retarded is that? All right, well, screw you, Wall Street Journal. Click, I'm not reading you now. I just killed it. All right, so there was another story that was going to dovetail onto that story. But hey, we'll start here. Your smartphone not only will be the first biosensors, but it will also be used to diagnose signs of mental illness. I had discussed that yesterday. There were some stories I had seen over the last few months where they were talking about utilizing voice patterns that they had identified a long time ago in schizophrenics. There's a certain linguistic syntax that schizophrenics use, and they're going to run that through some sort of voice recorder or a voice analyzer and be able to diagnose whether or not you have a mental illness and how far you are right or left on the spectrum. A study published in Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine uses mobile phone data to identify people with symptoms of depression, in this case, with a rate of 86% accuracy. Although we remain to be entirely convinced, lead researcher Professor David Moore explains the significance of this is that we can detect a person that has depressive symptoms and the severity of those without asking them any questions. And I most certainly would believe this. I mean, I've discussed this before as well, just looking at people's online habits, when they come online, when they come offline, how many hours they sleep, when they get up. You know, they can determine a lot of different things. And if, of course, you change up your routine, and not for just one day, I mean, obviously you could have big life changes or whatever, but if your routine dramatically changes and all of a sudden you're sleeping 12 hours and you're not speaking to any of your friends, and, you know, that could determine that Johnny is a little bit sad. But the scary part of this is that we're leaving this digital footprint everywhere. That was kind of what we've been talking about, that dossier that knows everything about you, that electronic vault of information that is being collected, collated, database, spliced and diced, stored away for future use, all of which has been undisclosed, is a problem because it is setting the precedent right now. And us resistant consumers, those of us who lived before technology started overtaking our daily lives, at least we understood that there is a price to pay for free services. Some of us did anyway, at least the ones in the tech industry. There is no free lunch. Mr. Feinauer told us that in fifth grade, and I always remember that because there is no free lunch. When it looks too good to be true, it probably is. That has held true for me for my entire adult life. Anyway, now that we have an objective measure of behavior related to depression, this is back to the story, and we're detecting it passively, so even without your knowledge, phones can provide data unobtrusively without any effect on the user. So again, they'll be able to suck data, make diagnoses about you without it being painful, Johnny, at all. And then they'll be able to, who knows, send in the electric shock therapy to be able to get you over your depression. I know that vagus nerve has a little spot right next to the ear that they can zippity zap, and they can get you high as a kite on dopamine. We read about those dopamine headphones, which I haven't seen anything about since they said they were going to be released. But why couldn't they do something like that? That dopamine addiction seems to be a dangling carrot that gets people excited, gets people chasing after the carrot. The only problem is that dopamine carrot is the addictive carrot. And if you get on that addictive treadmill, it is going to put you into the cyclical bad place where you will go from being high as a kite to being depressed and sad over and over and over again. All right, so we got cell phones diagnosing illnesses, and it's going to be more so in the future. It's going to be all kinds of biometrics and heartbeats and oxygen levels. We even saw some mobile blood diagnoses and things of that nature. I don't think that it is going to be too much further in the future before we start seeing this being prevalent. They said $30 to $40. And you'll be able to get your doctor on demand. And we had a cardiologist who had said that somebody's cell phone that had been taking statistics told him he was in defib, and sent a an ECG to the doctor with the description of the problem. At some point also, you might be able to take a picture of a rash, remember, and run it through the AI, have it diagnose what the rash is, and then have the AI suggest some remedies that you could try to fix that rash. I mean, it's just pretty crazy. This is going to, of course, all be done in keeping the cost of medicine down. Remember, after Obamacare, we now have so many people who now have health insurance that our doctors are overwhelmed. Our healthcare facilities are overbooked. Yet we want to give all these people healthcare. Well, now, welcome, Dr. Smartphone. Everybody's got a smartphone, and the smarter we can make these phones, back-ending to all kinds of great databases. Remember IBM Watson, curing cancer. You know, we can offload some of this healthcare and actually make our cell phones real tricorders, like they had promised a long time ago. Now, we've discussed AI for the last week and a half or so. It's probably going to end up being the rest of the week, I guess. But this is going to tie into now some pretty scary stuff. We looked at mind reading and some of the brain scanning that they've been doing. GE jumping on board, buying two artificial intelligence companies. And one of their big six future goals is mind mapping to be able to identify how all the neurons work and to be able to understand patterns for different types of things you're thinking, remembering, and be able to reproduce those patterns. So we found out that with fear, there's been an experiment now. They've been able to see where the actual zip-zaps are in the brain. When you're experiencing fear, and then be able to tamp down on those zip-zaps without you even knowing, to be able to remove the memory of that fear, to recondition your brain to now feel something different in the same circumstances, because, oh, it is so much more pleasant than having to face your own fears. I mean, how ridiculous is that? Well, now let's start teaching machines to learn to do more things that humans do. We have them on surveillance everywhere. We have them recognizing faces and being able to do diagnoses to tell whether or not you are a future potential terrorist or criminal or genius or bingo player. Well, now Google's AI has actually outdone humans after watching thousands of hours of television at reading lips. Now, this is scary. They can identify your face in a crowd, and they can determine statistically if you could be a criminal, and they can scan your brain. And I was trying to find some data on doing long-distance fMRIs. I still need to dig more into that. I don't know. There was some interesting stuff out there. And I don't think that would be in the not-too-distant future, guys. They got stuff going on with millimeter wave and 5G and some of that millimeter wave naked body scanner. They got all kinds of technology going on with opening blood-brain barriers and sonography as well. It's not going to be too long before they start figuring out ways to use wireless technologies of some sort to be able to do remote brain scans. Well, they have now, with all this other information out there that they're already garnering about us, just as we simply walk around the grocery store or drive around town, Google's AI can now read lips better than humans as well. So as they are scanning our faces and determining on the fly whether or not we will ever cause problems or trouble, or if you're having some unclean thoughts there, Johnny, that may not be in line with the narrative, because remember, there's all this fake news out there, wink. Researchers from Google's AI division, which is their DeepMind, we've heard about their DeepMind many times. DeepMind is that project that Kurzweil and all the other lunatics are working on. DeepMind is probably also part of that whole Knowledge Vault truth algorithm project. It is doing all of the deep learning and thinking and drawing conclusions. Researchers from Google's AI division, DeepMind, as well as, again, the University of Oxford. And I think that's where we saw that mind-reading machine. Cambridge, so close. University of Cambridge versus University of Oxford. That's where they were doing the reconditioning fear in the brain, was at Cambridge. But DeepMind has used artificial intelligence to create the most accurate lip-reading software ever. So now they could take all those HD Argus drones with HD petabillion pixel cameras on them that we read about, and they can zoom in on your face, see you talking to somebody in a waiting in a parking lot or something that looks suspicious, and they will be able to get your entire conversation just by reading your lips, using thousands of hours of TV footage from the BBC. Scientists have trained a neural network to note video footage with a 46.8% accuracy. That might not seem that impressive at first, only at 48%, but especially compared to the AI accuracy rates when transcribing audio. But tested on the same footage, a professional human lip reader was only able to get the right word at 12.4% of the time. Well, that's insane. So again, we also found out that we have AI that's reading micro expressions, those super recognizers. Those are the people that law enforcement use and recruit to try and recognize criminals in a crowd. But they've even been able to take it one step further and recognize tells whether or not someone's telling the truth, or they look nervous, or they look suspicious. And now feed that into AI as well. Guys, there will be nowhere to hide. We need to get those little LEDs and clip them onto our baseball cap that puts a big glowing light in front of our faces every time we are in public in front of a camera. I mean, I don't care if you're doing anything wrong or not. Here's the thing. What gives them the right to be doing splicing and dicing of your scans and making determinations about you when you've done nothing wrong? That's where my problem is. Our liberties are going completely out of window. We will be, I mean, we're already surveilled. Anything we type, anything we search, anything we watch, anything we talk about. I'm sure that they have thousands of hours of my recorded voice. There's 400 and, oh, last time I looked, there was 412 before the first cup shows up there. We found out they have Photoshop for voice where they could insert words into your mouth. All it required was 20 minutes of your voice audio for them to run it through the algorithms and get your inflections to be able to duplicate words then to make you say stuff you never did. How frightening is that? At some point in the future, we're going to hear my voice on some nightly news saying that I declared some sort of craziness and that I'm a lunatic and they're hunting for me now when I never did anything. Guys, you know me. I think after all these years of people listening to me, you know that I'm not a violent person in any way, shape, or form. I'm also not a suicidal person, so remember that. I'm just a person that likes to call bullshit when I read it. And there's a lot of bullshit out there. I'm also the type of person that's had lots and lots and lots of dreams since I was a kid about horrible dystopian futures that I seem to be seeing in our not-too-distant future now. And I am trying to explain to everyone why this dopamine carrot, why this being sucked into the machine, why being in love with our devices, having to be connected 24/7 is the grand old trick that they played on us. It's the little mousie in the trap with a big lump of peanut butter. Maybe it's the have a heart trap for some of us, where it's not going to have the big chunk that cuts you in half. No! Little have a heart trap puts you inside the clear plexiglass green cage. At least it's got a couple little air holes and a big hunk of peanut butter. But then they could take you anywhere. They could take you down the street to Ace Hardware and let you loose. Or they could put you into a maze and see what kind of horrible things they could do to you. It's very scary. They could zippity zap your brain and make your fear go away. That's what they did to the little rats and mices at Cambridge University. All right. So anyway, back to teaching DeepMind to read lips. So DeepMind has been able to read lips at a 46.8% accuracy versus 12.4% of humans. We're finding time and time again, just like Watson doing oncology. Watson is able to outnumber 20 oncologists in a big meeting room once a week that are looking at all the tough cases, trying to decide what the best treatment therapies are for these poor patients that are dying of cancer. And Watson was able in, I don't know, it was some amazing number of cases, 30, 60, some percent of cases, it was a huge number, find additional treatments or things that the doctors missed because they weren't up on the newest studies or the newest research or whatever. And it's coming out time and time again that AI is outdoing humans. We even found AI has been learning all on its own and doing things that we never even taught it. There was a story from a few days back that hit my artificial intelligence feed. And I had a massive crash. I told you I've had this show up for a whole week and all these stories lined up here to be able to talk about this, that, and the other thing. It was a perfect progression. And after the show yesterday, before I even started doing the notes, all of a sudden Chrome just closed. I was like, oh, well, all right. Thank goodness we could do a recovery. And I opened Chrome And it just came up with my main homepage and no suggestions saying, I just crashed. Do you want to recover all your tabs? I lost the whole entire progression. So I had to go through the entire history of like the last 2 weeks. But now they're not in the same order. So we're going to take a different angle. But there was a story, another story about Google's AI. And so we had the one about lip reading that can weigh out to humans. Well, now Google's AI can translate. Remember, natural language processing was something that Kurzweil had started on long, 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 long ago with the OCR recognition technology for scanners, being able to scan words and reproduce them. And that natural language learning for AI was something that really kind of kicked it all off. They wanted to be able to take unformatted text all around the internet and chat rooms and different applications and be able to try to garner meaning from the context around it. And I've talked about that project a lot of times over the years because it really kind of shook me up. It would allow them to get around you using code words or slang or whatever to maybe say something that you don't necessarily want to say out in the open. And it'll allow them to figure out what you actually mean and tell that you're being able, that you're talking in some sort of slang. I mean, it's kind of a scary thought because there really is no way to say what you think or what you feel to somebody without someone else knowing it, even if you're trying to say it in a really covert, and not in a dangerous covert way, just in a way that you don't necessarily want the fat, greasy scumbag with the drippity drip McDonald's cheeseburger grease on their shirt sitting in the van reading all your private shit as part of the NSA. I mean, it's very bothersome to me. I've always had an issue with surveillance. I'm one of those independent people. I don't know. Trust me, and you will be happy that you did. Don't trust me, and I am a mother. Because if you don't trust me, then I'm going to go out of my way to be a dick. You know, especially if I'm accused of doing something that I was never doing. I was never causing any harm. It's very bothersome. So anyway, the fact that this natural language processing was out there, and I already knew for years that they were scraping this data, trying to come up with what you meant by what you said. Google's AI can now translate between languages, and this Google Translate was another big global project. They developed it and they set it loose on the internet, and we've taught it is every time we plug something in and say, translate, Google. And now you don't even have to plug it in. You could just hit a button when it sees a foreign language. It says, do you want to translate this page? Yes. And Google does a translation, but we've been teaching the machine by asking it to do translations. And so what has happened is the machine has gotten smarter than its master. Google's AI can now translate between languages that it was never taught to translate between. Now think about that one for a second. Neural networks are machines and algorithms developed to behave like the human brain, ding, all part of that brain initiative. But development at Google Translate shows that once again, AI can outperform humans in a big way, ding, 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 every single time. Whether it be a game of Go or diagnosing cancer, AI can do it all. Google's AI can now translate language pairs it has not ever been trained for. And to be clear, this means that it can translate between languages it was never taught to translate. This works if AI first translates both of the languages into a common language that it knows. Hey, that's called common denominator. Pretty smart cookie there, Google's deep mind. I'm going to say, translating languages is pretty difficult, even just to English. But if you're going like between French and Polish, like I said, I took years of both, that would be close to impossible, I would think, for the human mind. I mean, you'd have to be a linguist and you'd have to be very well versed to be able to do that. I wonder what the speed Google's DeepMind does this ads. Like IBM Watson downloading and reading a million books a second. To break this down, Google recently upgraded Translate to the company's deep learning Google Neural Machine Translation System. I'm telling you, that AI guy that was running the whole AI ship at Google took over the search engine back last year when the head honcho stepped down. Of course, he said he was going into retirement, but who knows? I think that there may have been some ethical arguments going on, because by releasing AI into the world of Google search engine was letting one of those first genies out of the bottle into the system to go free and to grow. The beginnings of Skynet, people. But regardless, the head of search engine from the very beginning of Google stepped down, went quietly into the sunset, and the head of the AI division took over. And the AI division has been working with Kurzweil all this time in the natural language processing, and he's the mad science evangelist. I've said that many times before. The public famous face that can come out and talk about all these great new futuristic technologies are going to make our life easier and allow us to sit around and eat grapes at some point in the future. But Kurzweil's a lunatic, guys. Kurzweil is a little bit off his rocker, and he wants to upload his brain and our brains to the machine so we have immortality, don't forget. He wants to release the nanobots in our blood so we can have little robot doctors that live inside of us and connect to our brainstem to give us full-blown 100% 24/7 internet connectivity direct to our brains, be able to interact with the cloud, as well as tamp down on inflammation that causes disease within your body and keep us operating within parameters. And then even feed that information back to your cell phone so we can go right to your doctor's smartphone and ensure the machine that you are being good and doing what you are told. And it's beyond horrifying. In his blog post, researchers from the team on this Google Neural Machine Translation System, which is aptly called Google Brain, discussed how this new zero-shot translation works. And in short, the system is able to automatically group sentences and phrases with the same meaning, and then it links them together through previously learned languages in what developers call, quote, interlingua, unquote. And pretty much what this interlingua is a third language that AI, Google's AI, has come up with that is the translation language. This development not only gives users a wider range of functionality, but also cuts back on high computational costs. Remember, it always gets cheaper, better, faster. Translate works with 103 languages, which corresponds to 5,253 pairs, and that is pairs of languages that they can translate between. With the older computational techniques that it had to be trained for, but the neural network that it now works with has models that can totally skip human inputted training thanks to advanced and complex encoding systems. There will be nowhere to run and hide. You can make up a new language, a new cipher, like they used to do during the world wars, to be able to send encoded messages to friends on the other side of the pond. Guys, you won't be able to do that at all. There will be no encoded anything unless we come up with a new alphabet. And I bet you even that Google's DeepMind will be able to do that as well. A future where artificial intelligence barely needs any human prompting to function is, and this is the story saying this, full of possibilities, wink, both good and bad. Yeah, I would say run and hide under a rock somewhere right now. Find a cave and don't come out until it's all over. Self-learning AI is being explored by several developers. And tomorrow's everyday computer is expected to have these capabilities to be able to improve its own performance through its own experiences. And I would say that that would be a part of that shape-shifting immune system for computers, as well as to be in the future for humans. Be able to morph itself on the fly, to be able to interact with the environment and the circumstances at the time to get itself operating back within parameters. This means that our computers will not only be able to self-train itself eventually, they will know what we need, ding, and anticipate our desires, without any prompting. And that's going to take us a little bit to the future here. Of course, this is a few steps removed from where we currently are, but don't worry about it with exponential technologies. It'll be in the not-too-distant future. However, more and more, AI is not only becoming more human-like, it is outperforming us in nearly every single way. And that should be the wake-up bell. We are creating this stuff. This is where a lot of the venture capital is going right now, dumping into huge AI projects all over the globe. And remember, there's an arms race going on, not just between universities and different research institutes, and also the war machine happening between countries, cyber warfare everywhere. This is going to be the way of the future. And there's going to be good or bad. There's going to be all in the name of keeping us safe, keeping us healthy. But those will be able to go awry, and those will be able to be programmed with hidden back doors to allow them to do other things that we may not have originally intended. So don't trust them, people. Don't believe them. It is all a trap. So a future disrupted by, and that is one of those disruptive technologies, a future disrupted by fully autonomous AI is not all that far-fetched, they say, and I would have to second that opinion. These developments help to reveal that while machines we create decode complex networks of computation, we need to determine how to use them for the best. And today, it may be a translator's job that's on the line, ding, another white-collar job out a window. But in the future, these limits seem boundless, yes. And we will be enslaved as they become smarter than us. But don't worry about it, because that dopamine dangling carrot, all those things that produce dopamine like drugs and sex and rock and roll, gambling and all the things bad for us, yep, well, scientists believe as they've been trying to anthropomorphize technology, putting a pretty happy smiley face on a tin can, teaching these tin cans to be able to read our faces and our micro expressions to determine whether or not you are friend or foe, to determine whether or not you are lying, to determine whether or not you're having a road rage moment. Well, they now believe that they have nailed the combination that could help robots feel love. Let's not even go there. And yeah, this is going to talk about a cafe. I don't think I ever mentioned this one, but I did post a story about this new cafe in the UK on my Daily Dose of WTF page. There is a proposal. Oh, it's in Geneva. There is a proposal to open Cafe Fellatio. Okay, turn down the volume, people, if it's a little too early for you. Which is an establishment in Geneva, Switzerland, where men, which I don't know why it would only be men, but hey, men would be able to get fellatio while drinking their morning cup of coffee. And it was met with no uncertain outrage. I think Amsterdam would probably be a better city for that. And city authorities have decided it is also against Swiss law. So Bradley Charvat of facegirl.ch, which is the escort service behind this project, has adjusted the details of the project. He would just use sex bots instead of human prostitutes. It is not clear what the robots would look like. We've seen, though, there's some pretty impressive humanoid robots that are being put out recently. Japan is way ahead of the game, but also Hanson Robotics are the ones that made the Sophia robots. It is not clear what the robots would look like or whether they would be able, what they would be able to do, but the Geneva authorities have also yet to make up their mind whether this is an acceptable solution. So we're going to pimp out sex bots at a cafe. This is pretty disgusting. Geneva authorities now will decide whether or not to allow this. And on the one hand, you could argue that these sorts of robots, presumably looking as human-like as possible, are nothing more than technologically advanced sex toys. But on the other hand, if something is even remotely human-like, shouldn't we take pains not to dehumanize it in this way? And again, now we get to this, these big ethical conundrums, whether or not as AI gets as smart and in the not too distant future, smarter than humans, do they have rights? Do they get a chance to vote? Do they get protected from abuses? Somebody's kicking an Atlas bot to the ground. We've seen some video on that. Or somebody is dehumanizing a sex bot in a fellatio cafe. Do we free it from its slavery? You know, I don't know, people who have listened to the show for a while probably know what my opinion on this is. I say kill all robots. They are going to be the death of the human race. They don't deserve any rights. We should not be creating a new life form that especially becomes more intelligent than us. I don't think they deserve rights. But hate to tell you, people, as they get more intelligent than us, we are going to become their pets like Elon Musk had predicted. I'm going to get on Musk train because I think he's a smart cookie and he knows a lot more than what he's letting on. He is a very smart guy who is in the middle of building this technology himself. I would listen to him. He's one of those visionaries. These questions about whether or not we have ethical rules against dehumanizing robots are about to become more complex. Houman Shimani, a director of artificial intelligence and robotics technologies at the National Taipei University in Taiwan, has built a machine that can respond emotionally to how humans treat it. Now, here's something to worry about. As AI, using their AI googly eyes, i.e. cameras, have gotten really good at being able to translate whether or not you're a criminal, whether or not you're trustworthy, whether or not you're lying, whether or not you're road raging, they will be able to identify what your emotions are and how to interact with you. And as robots get imbued with more and more human-like qualities and start to look more and more human-like, this anthropomorphization, it's going to be very difficult to distinguish between what is human and what is not. And we're going to start to get attached to these robots as if they were real people. And that is what they want us to do, guys. They want to bleed that line between human and synthetic, because that is the key to winning over us resistant consumers. And if they can show us how helpful they would be, oh, you'd have a home helper robot making your meals, making the bed, taking care of Nana and Susie, reading Susie her bedtime story, patting her on the top of the head, we would be more apt to accept them and get a robot in every pot in your house, just like in that iRobot movie. So they could have 24/7 connection to us. They'll be your best friend. You'll tell them everything. You'll be able to tell your robot all your deep, dark secrets. They'll be your psychologist and your doctor. And it's going to be good for you. It's going to keep you safe. It'll be your protector. It'll be your robot doctor. It'll keep health costs down. I mean, I just see this going off the rails crazy as one of the last nails in the coffin. They're going to teach robots to feel love. And they're going to try to get us to respond with love. And just like the DeepMind project has learned to translate languages without ever even being taught to translate between two languages, figured out how to do it all alone, How long is it going to take before robots learn all these emotions and decide that we are just so damn predictable? Because it's learned all of our combinations. It's learned how to detect if we're lying or if we are trying to make a quick dash for the door as we're making those little micro expressions looking sideways, trying not to look suspicious. I mean, I don't know. Your only hope is going to be to grab the shovel and go for the head. Try to knock it off. I mean, I don't know. Turn it off, man. Flip the switch. They're not going to want you to turn it off. There won't be a kill switch. You will be its prisoner. Anyway, Smanny calls his professional line of inquiry Lovatics and says that it is about connecting the dots from two different fields. One field is robotics, which includes artificial intelligence and mechanical engineering. And the other one is the science behind human love. And remember, a lot of that science is coming from the brain, from those reward pathways and those happy brain chemicals. We have the dopamine, the oxytocin, and the serotonin, or all the feel-good chemicals. They're going to find ways to manipulate those, and don't worry about that because they are far down the path of being able to do that already. The latest achievement of Lovatics looks like a furry hat with a cleverly fitted cameras and microphones and tactile sensors, speakers, and colorful diodes, all powered by an Intel Atom processor, driving around on tiny wheels. And that Atom processor we looked at when we looked at that model chick at that Consumer Electronics show who had on that spider dress. She had these spider things on both of her shoulders that the legs were robotically all curled up. And the second that that processor, it had some sort of biosensor built into it, the second that that processor started to sense that she was starting to feel a little anxious and it was detecting she had a little sweat, thin, permeable layer of sweat showing she was nervous, and it showed that her heart rate had been increasing. Those little robot spiders on her shoulders went into action, and their little pointy legs all came out in a defensive posture because it knew that she was feeling anxious. Well, they built that same processor now into this Lovatics furry hat. It almost looks like a, oh, what were they called on Star Trek? Tribble! It looks like a fuzzy white tribble. How fitting is that? The hardware isn't exactly thrilling, but no, tomorrow it'll be in the shape of a sex bot, so don't worry. But what is unique about this machine? It is very peculiar kind of artificial intelligence. Samani, along with Elam Sandichong, a human-computer interaction specialist, laid down the underlying AI theory in a paper published in 2012. The researcher began trying to answer the question of how love works from a purely scientific point of view, and their solution was that the internal experience of love can be traced back to our endocrine system. Ding! The way we feel about others is to a significant degree determined by our hormones, and I would agree with that. That's what all my research has shown as well. Both our real endocrine system and Samani's artificial one consists of two sets of hormones. There's the biological and the emotional working simultaneously. Biological hormones like melatonin, neoepiphrine, epinephrine, orexin, and ghrelin regulate things like drowsiness, blood pressure, blood glucose, heartbeat, and rate, as well as appetites in human. We tried to mimic that in our robot. For example, we increased the levels of ghrelin to make you feel hungry. Digital ghrelin makes the robot want to charge its battery. Oh, how frightening. So they're making like synthetic hormones as commands to make the robots do something. And then, of course, we talked about these, the emotional hormones. These are the ones that I've spent time looking into. Govern your emotional states. That is your dopamine for excitement and alertness. serotonin for happiness and tension, endorphins for our sense of well-being, and finally, oxytocin for trust, empathy, and love. From the psychological standpoint, oxytocin is the hormone of love, and that is that hormone that if you ever had a baby, it just overtakes your brain and makes you totally high when you're first holding that infant. It is, your body is awash, especially as a mother after childbirth. Your body is fully awash in the hormone oxytocin, and its level increases when we interact with our beloved ones. And it decreases when we are deprived of this interaction. Well, that too has now been simulated in AI. Oh, boy. So, I don't know. Well, the reality is, we can't be sure what it means when you quote-unquote fall in love, says founder Peter Voss of Smart Action, an AI company based in El Segundo, California. It is all about the subjectivity of the experience. And their philosophy says that this robot is an object and we still have a long way to go before making it something more. But don't worry about it because we're already working on it. 20 participants, 10 men, 10 women, interacted with Samani's robot for about 2 hours in the lab. And afterward, they were asked to fill out a slightly adjusted love attitude scale questionnaire, a tool commonly used in psychology to measure what extent a couple's relationship is based on. And that is a number of factors: friendship, physical attraction, having fun, commitment, and being unhealthily obsessed with a partner. Unhealthily obsessed. Based on the relationships, there's a lunatic sleeping outside your house with his feet sticking out a window and won't go home. Based on the results, the most dominant form of love in a human-robot relationship, oh my goodness, seems to be called ludus love, the type that develops out of having fun together. Guys, they're trying to figure out how to get us to fully open our arms and accept robots into the human race. That is what this is about. It is not a cell phone anymore. It's not going to be clickety-click, do a Google search. This is now that next step of bringing them into the fold to interact with us on a daily basis. And they're finding that there's a lot of angst out there. We covered that a few days back. People don't like to be told what to do. They do not want an authority that is smarter than them and snarky to be able to determine the rules. And so if they make them one of our loved ones, if they make them somebody we can trust and be friends with, we will be more apt to accept them into our daily lives and further this agenda. Well, so anyway, the type that develops is having fun together. And of course, this might be because the robot is physically designed as a playful fuzzball. But there are other pretty obvious limitations of this project. The study was limited in both sample size and interaction time. But it is definitely a first step and a proof of concept. Samani is seriously considering commercializing this technology, and there's clearly a demand for such devices. I know people, he says, that buy robotic vacuum cleaners, and that is a company really called iRobot out of Massachusetts. They used to have a military arm as well, which they sold off just recently. But they have people, he knows people that buy robotic vacuum cleaners, decorate them, give them names, and treat them as though they were sentient human beings. And you know, those robots even have super HD cameras that are scanning and mapping your house as they're driving around. And I can guarantee you they have microphones as well so they can interact with you. And this is just, he even says it, anthropomorphism. Ding! That was a big thing when I got my English degree. We always looked at different traits that were anthropomorphized in stories. You know, God is anthropomorphized when you envision him in your head as man sitting in a throne in the sky. It's making a human form on something that is not, where you attribute human characteristics to objects. Or maybe this is just what loneliness looks like. And robots will deal with our loneliness like it has never been dealt with before, says British artificial intelligence guru David Levy. In his 2008 book, Love and Sex with Robots, Levy wrote that in the near future, love robots will be the norm as love with other humans. While the number of acts practiced between humans will be extended as robots teach us more than is in all the world's published manuals. So come on. I don't think so, but maybe, just maybe, the sex bots are coming. I really think, guys, that's how they're going to sell it to us. And don't worry about it, because we got Kurzweil out there. Kurzweil is going to tell us about how much better it will be when we augment ourselves with the machine as cloud learning is growing and databases are increasing. We got China, who is now taking all that big data and they're turning it into Big Brother. That's going to be the end result. Remember, we got countries that are way ahead of us in a lot of different things, and we should be paying a lot of attention. But Kurzweil says, mind you, this is already three, almost 4 years ago, people will soon upload their brains to computers. This has been their vision for a very long time, and he is now the head of engineering at Google. There are around 377 million results on Google.com for the query, "Can I live forever?" Remember, this is what all the tech titans are investing their venture capital into. Ask that question to the company's top engineer, and that would be Ray Kurzweil. And you are likely to hear an answer that is much more concise. Simply put, Google's Ray Kurzweil says immortality is only a few years away. Ding, 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 ding. And that would be digital immortality, at least. And remember, we have GE, and we talked all about that yesterday. Brain mapping, reconditioning, and we're going to be talking about uploading here. They're cracking all those secrets with the Brain Initiative and the Connectome Project and all these HD scanners and being able to identify exactly what patterns are produced in a brain for different memories, and they can remove and add new memories. They can tinker with our emotions, and they can push those chemical buttons with a few little zippity zaps. Kurzweil now, 64, and that was 3 years ago. He's now 67. You better hurry up there, Kurzweil. Was only brought on to Google late last year, so that was 2012, and that was right at Christmas time. But that hasn't stopped him from making headlines already. During a conference in New York City, the company's director of engineering said that the growth of biotechnology is so quickly paced that he predicts our lives will be dramatically changed in just a few decades. And according to Kurzweil, humans will soon be able to upload their entire brains to the computer. After then, other advancements won't be too far behind. He says life expectancy was 20,000 years ago, and we doubled it in just 200 years, and this will go into high gear within the next 10 to 20 years from now. Probably less than 15, we will be reaching that tipping point where we will be adding more time than has gone by to our lifetimes. In his book, The Singularity is Near, Kurzweil predicted that ongoing achievements in biotech would mean that by the middle of the century, humans will develop the means to instantly create new portions of ourselves, either biological or non-biological, so that people can have a biological body at one time and then not another, and then have it again and then change it. And I'm telling you guys, this is download nanotechnology. He also said there soon will be software-based humans who will live out on the web, projecting bodies whenever they need them or want them, including holographically projected bodies, foglet projected bodies, and physical bodies comprised of nanobot swarms. Now, we talked about those foglet swarms back a few days ago as one of those new crazy technologies that might be coming in the future. We also talked about software-based humans that live on the web. When we looked at that baby X, that full-blown human baby simulation online that has now spun out to a company called Soul Machines with their first big investment by venture capitalists. Guys, this is happening. There's a Russian billionaire that joined with Kurzweil way back when as part of the Singularity Project. He had a project called 2045 that it outlined as we get more and more advanced and moving up into the cloud, we would be able to download ourselves into an avatar body. And I don't think that that is going to be in the way, way future. They are already working with that. These brain scans, that's what this is all about. And cracking every secret of the human mind and trying to duplicate human emotions in AI is going to increase the speed at which this is happening. Kurzweil joined Google in December 2012. And in 1999, he was the winner of the National Medal of Technology and Innovation. I didn't know that. And in the 1970s, yes, Kurzweil was responsible for creating the first commercial text-to-speech synthesizer. I have a friend who has some Kurzweil keyboards. I even got a picture because I couldn't believe we were that close to Kurzweil. All right, so to end this with a little bit of insult to injury, China is now turning big data into Big Brother. So be careful what you give up to the machine. The country wants to assign citizens a score that determines their eligibility from everything to loans to education based upon your online profile. And you know what? The Chinese aren't going to be the only ones, because I think at some point in the future, our dossier is going to be turned right on its head and be used against us. All right, guys, make sure you stick around because it is Wednesday. All kind of live radio. Lonnie Clark is live up next. And then we have Josh live at 6, The Voice of New York at 7. And all kinds of great stuff for us tonight. All right, guys.
Don't you see why?